Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the STEM-Powered Women Podcast. I'm your host, Brittany A.J. Mariki, the founder of Sisters in STEM. If you're new to our audience and don't really know who we are, Sisters in STEM is a multimedia platform aimed toward empowering women of color in their daily lives and their passion for science, technology, engineering, and math. I created this podcast to showcase empowered women, STEM-powered women. Today, our guest, Ugo Mineo, is going to tell us a little about the different paths she took to earn her undergraduate engineering degree. She began her career working in the oil and gas industry. When the opportunity arose to pursue her master's degree on a fully funded corporate fellowship, she took it. Her graduate school experience shifted her mindset on traditional career paths and guided her toward entrepreneurship. Now she's leading a startup company that's on the verge of changing the way Nigeria manages their energy consumption. I've known her since undergrad, and it's been great seeing her flourish into such an amazing businesswoman. Now, I don't know about you, but I ended up in STEM by coincidence. Like many of us, someone once told me, "Oh, baby, you're good at math and science. You should become an engineer." I took their words to be true and ran with it. In school, they painted the pretty picture of working in the office for some big company or leading the process at a manufacturing plant. I never truly considered entrepreneurship as part of that path. That's not something they teach us from day one. But now we're growing into a new era where ownership is at the forefront, and many people have been using their businesses and resources to give back to their communities. That's exactly what today's guest is doing, and I wanted to share her story to inspire more of you to think a little deeper about the paths you're taking with your STEM degrees. I know I am. Now let's get to it. Say hey, Ugwam.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Brittany.
Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Sure. So I am the co-founder and CEO of Shift Power Solutions, formerly known as Solstice Energy Solutions. And we are an energy technology company that focuses on developing IoT, so connected hardware, and integrated software solutions to connect and intelligently manage distributed energy resources. So that's things that aren't on the central grid, so standard electricity. Especially in markets that struggle with grid reliability and resiliency,
nice.
So blackouts.
And so you started, so obviously we connected when we were at the University of Illinois, and you moved from there going to Stanford. And what did you study there?
Yeah, so I actually took a break before I went to Stanford and was working in the energy industry. And when I was at Stanford, I started in civil environmental engineering, focused on the environmental side, environmental risk. But then shifted my focus to energy, alternative energy in emerging markets.
Nice. That's really cool. Your path is so, so amazing. Did you always know you wanted to be an entrepreneur, or did you discover that passion while you were in grad school?
I did not always want to be an entrepreneur. I never planned on it. It's something I came upon in grad school. I think as engineers in particular, we're naturally problem solvers. And part of being an entrepreneur is solving problems. So when the opportunity came to solve problems outside of the lab, it was just so convincing and appealing that I decided to take that detour.
That's really cool. What made you choose the entrepreneurship route? Because you easily could have joined the corporate workforce, cashed in those degrees you've been stacking up, and ride that wave.
Right. So I think it's a few things. First, when I got to Stanford, the culture there, perhaps because it's situated in Silicon Valley and just the very essence of Stanford, was one that just was rich with entrepreneurship. You were constantly seeing people who weren't just studying and becoming experts in whatever degree they were pursuing, but their vision was to figure out, how do I change the world with this? And oftentimes in changing the world, it's not going to existing institutions, it's starting something new yourself. And so suddenly I was not in an environment or an ecosystem where I was expected to just learn how to be an engineer so I can go support existing institutions. But you were literally being taught how to be somebody who took what you learned at Stanford to change the world. And so for me, it started off as just my research and what I was very interested in from an academic perspective. But my vision started going beyond my corporate job that I had left and I was planning to return to. And what legitimately happened is my co-founder and I were working on a project. It became so compelling that my advisors suggested we take an entrepreneurship class to see if we think we could really take this, commercialize the technology. And at a certain point, we were just told that from investors in Silicon Valley, that if they were me and my co-founder, they would have dropped out and left. And so after much hesitation and thought, I ended up leaving the PhD program and pursuing this entrepreneurship journey.
Oh, wow. See, I didn't realize that you were on a PhD track. Were you at the MS level and then going for the PhD as well? Because I've also like learned from people through interviewing that you don't actually have to get the MS. You can just go straight for the PhD. Or were you at that point where you can get that MS and like, all right, I'm satisfied where I am here. I'm going to pursue this other route.
Yeah. So I entered on the MS track, but transitioned to the PhD program. And it's kind of just a blur when you do that. Once you get admitted by your advisor to the PhD program, it's not like there's some big transition or change. I mean, now you have different milestones and your timelines look different. So I entered thinking I just wanted a master's because I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted my thesis to be on while pursuing the PhD. Mm-hmm. And so one of that time, so you figure out what I wanted to do for the PhD. And then during that time, I got a full fellowship, transitioned to the PhD program. And shortly after being admitted, I exited the program.
Wow. Okay. So what are a few paths that people can take with their STEM degree? Because so many people think that corporate is their only option. And they think that if they're not as smart as Steve Jobs, then they can't have their own startup.
Great thing about entrepreneurship is it gives you a lot of creative license that you don't get in corporate America. And I think people think that, you know, you have to have some like novel idea, and you do. I don't want to say that you don't, but a lot of what changed for me wasn't that I was looking for a startup or looking for some crazy novel idea, but instead looking at my research as not just a means to get a degree and then go work in corporate America, but looking at my work as a way to find an opportunity to change some part of the world or to improve upon something. And so I think you taking entrepreneurship courses while in school, undergrad or grad, I think is so important. And even if you do end up going back to corporate America, I mean, I learned so much about how my senior managers were probably thinking, you know, like the people outside of like my core engineering team, and how decisions are getting made and how you think about problem solving differently just by exploring entrepreneurship courses. And so it allows you to start seeing problem solving differently when you think about it as an entrepreneur versus purely as an engineer. And so I just encourage, take one or two entrepreneurship classes just so that you can look at your research, look at your courses, look at your extracurriculars in a different lens.
Now, I'm asking from my point of view where I'm no longer in school and I wish I had taken an entrepreneurship course. Where can you get those core skills that can help you on that route?
Yeah, so there's a lot of really great podcasts. I think there's podcasts and online material on things like how to start a startup. Those are great. I think some of them are free. They're pretty straightforward. You can probably get through it in, depending on how much you listen to podcasts, week or up to a month. There are other entrepreneurs, investors, well-known people that are worth like following on social media, that are worth subscribing to like their podcast. One of my investors, Arlen Hamilton, of Backstage Capital is fantastic and puts out a lot of great material on her entrepreneurship journey as a venture capitalist. And so that's like one really great way to learn about it. But I think it's a lot of it's about like your mentality. And so in your job, in your day-to-day life, it's about looking at things that are frustrating to you and are problems and not just leaving it as, man, I wish that I didn't have to deal with X, Y, Z, or I wish that this was faster, or I wish that there was a better way to do this. Like, this is frustrating to me. And instead looking at, well, what would I change about it? What could I build? What would solve that problem? And so looking at the world through that lens suddenly makes finding interesting entrepreneurship opportunities a lot easier. And so, like, for example, at your job, maybe you might see that their operational efficiency is really delayed by something that's happening in like software or flow, or it takes a long time for the analyst to sift through data because of how it's structured. While that's always been frustrating, and it's suddenly looking at it as an opportunity to build a software application that can improve that efficiency is where like the entrepreneur's journey actually starts. And the best problems are solved by people who are closest to the problems. So if you're thinking about being an entrepreneur, you're likely experiencing or having seen the problems that you could solve yourself.
Hmm. Aside from looking at it as a problem solver lens, what are other mind shifts that you had to make versus working in corporate to now running your own business?
So certainly the problem solving side of things, depending on your life stage and your personal predicament, you kind of also have to shift your mentality about like purpose, because people don't realize nearly how much you will sacrifice in building a successful startup. And because everyone wants to look great to investors in the whole world, even when people say that they're talking about the downside of being in a startup, they're not telling you, like, they're giving you the tip of the iceberg. And so part of the mentality shift is you really have to feel like this unreal calling to do what you're doing. And it might not be like that problem is so compelling, but like who you will become as a result of that problem is also like equally important to you. And so like to me, I think about when I was an undergrad, and you know this as an engineer, like you have to have really wanted to be an engineer to stick with it, at least at University of Illinois.
Oh yeah.
And certainly for me at Stanford. I mean, you were staying up late at night, and I mean, all programs have their challenges, but engineering there was unreal. And so at a certain point, you had to really feel convicted. And we know that there are people who just didn't feel that conviction and they left the program, and that's fine. So like a mentality shift in like, I truly feel convicted to do this is one significant part of like the mental shift, because otherwise with the challenges that I faced and many of my peers face, we would have left and just gone back to the security of corporate America.
Mm, I like that a lot, because it does have that sense of security, and you're jumping into, not to say you're jumping into the fire, but you're jumping in the fire. You're going for what you have that passion for, and that's what's fueling you. I want to learn a little bit more about your business. It, as you said, it was formerly called Solstice, and now it's called Shift Power Solutions. I thought it was very interesting that it kind of spawned from a project you had at Stanford. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Sure. So when I got to Stanford, I was actually coming from the oil and gas industry. And at the time at Stanford, and still today, there's so much research and conversation going on alternative energy, renewable energy, what energy will look like in the future. And so because I wanted to be abreast of all of these topics and I'm trying to be an expert, I start taking classes outside of like my traditional, basically where I came from oil and gas. And so as I start to think more about like what energy of the future can look like, and I'm having classes and conversations with literally pioneers in the energy space. I mean, I was doing independent study, a project in a class with the CTO / co-founder of Tesla. And so like you're just constantly around people who are just so forward-thinking and solving problems in like crazy ways that I started kind of personalizing that. And my family's from Nigeria. And if you know anything about Nigeria, it has massive energy challenges. So of course, as I'm taking all this in and I'm learning more and more about how we should think about energy in the future, I'm, of course, thinking of this in the context of Nigeria. And so when I start doing my research, which is basically how would we design and build out infrastructure in a smarter way? How would we build sustainable cities? I'm thinking about sustainable cities in emerging markets. So I'm constantly applying all of the work that we're doing, but in the context of emerging markets, and in this case, specifically Nigeria. And so through that process, my co-founder and I basically started thinking about this idea that's now commonly referred to as integrated decentralized power systems. And so for anyone who's in energy, they can go look that up, but it's just a different way about thinking about building up infrastructure and power infrastructure and making it smart and connected and super efficient and resilient. And so we started building technology that would allow us to collect the data and control power systems the way we needed to. And while we were actually building and testing that product for the purpose of research, the end users in Nigeria and customers found it quite intriguing to the point that they wanted to pay for it, even though we were building it for our own purposes. And so at that point, suddenly see, well, I'm onto something. People are willing to pay a decent amount of money for something that I've built, meaning it's solving some problem for them. And it's helping us essentially figure out how we're going to build infrastructure for them concurrently. Can I make a business out of this? And our advisor said yes. And so we started pushing it along further until we decided to commercialize it. So what the technology allows us to do is, for any type of distributed energy asset, so generators, solar, batteries, inverters, including existing grid connections, we can like remotely monitor, manage, control, and optimize these systems remotely, while users get a app that for the first time allows them to like see how much power they're using, from what sources, control these systems. And if you know anything about energy in Nigeria, you've never been able to do that, and dealing with energy is extremely frustrating. So in some ways, you can think of it like what Google's Nest did for the thermostat, we've now done for energy for homes and businesses in markets like Nigeria.
Wow. That is very impressive, because I know that it is a struggle, and a lot of families need to have that access. Is it something that's costly, or can more families that aren't, you know, well off still be able to access that technology?
Yeah. So our customer segment represents a larger consuming market segment of electricity. So we're going towards people who are already using big generators, big power systems, not just a grid connection. So for most of them, they're already spending at least about $300 a month on power. Most of them, you're getting up $500 to thousands of dollars when you go to like our commercial customers.
Wow.
So the market segment that we're targeting, these are urban, residential and commercial buildings. And the idea is that their energy assets represent a significant amount of distributed power. And we are trying to connect and intelligently manage all of those assets, because at scale, that represents an interesting opportunity to help support grids that frequently have blackouts. So it doesn't help us too much to go after people who don't have significant power resources at their home or their office or buildings. So our market segment's a bit different than what most people would think when you're talking about an emerging market.
I'm going to have to introduce my dad to your system, because I know that he would love to have something like that at his warehouse out there in Lagos. I think that'd be really cool. Making connections overseas.
Of course. That sounds great.
Do you want to grow this into other African countries or countries outside of Africa?
Absolutely. So we see ourselves as a global company who's just getting started in a very exciting market, Nigeria. So we are headquartered in San Francisco, and Nigeria is just our primary market, but we're excited about markets throughout Africa, throughout some areas of the Middle East, South Asia, certainly, and a few applications as well in Latin America. But right now, as an early stage company, we're just trying to stay focused on growing and scaling in our primary market.
Okay. Now, do you have a vision for Nigeria? How can Shift improve the way that the country consumes energy?
Yeah. So one of the a common saying that that Shift use and our customers certainly support is that you can't manage what you can't measure. And with the energy challenges that Nigeria has, if we're trying to figure out how to better invest in infrastructure, where to develop infrastructure, how to improve operational efficiency of infrastructure, we need to understand how people use energy. We need to understand how we can more flexibly use energy assets as well. So what Shift does at scale is we make it possible to, one, have extremely high resolution data about energy consumption across all power sources that right now almost no entity in the country has, including the government or the utilities. So that type of data and that type of insight is extremely powerful in doing some of the things that I just mentioned. Secondly, what's also really important is empowering consumers. So right now, a lot of people feel frustrated in their energy experience because getting insights, getting true intelligence about what's going on in their power systems is quite tough, challenging to do. You don't have a lot of great monitoring solutions for this market segment. And so for the first time, we're giving people the ability to know exactly what they use, how they behave, what's happening in real time, when things aren't working, what's going on. And so it makes it easier for people to make informed decisions about what they want. And especially if you start to think about solar and battery alternatives, a lot of people feel some uncertainty because it's a newer technology for them. And understanding how it works and what they need and the payback and all those things, it's kind of hard to know unless you are in that sector. So we want to make it easier for people to feel empowered and know what's going on in their energy experience.
That would be good. Once they feel that confidence in you guys, then it will definitely help it grow because, you know, word of mouth will help everything spread. Be like, I'm using this new technology. You guys should use it too.
Of course.
Do you see it as something that we could use here in the States? Now, I know we do have our own resources, but we don't often get a chance to switch between using our regular power that we power grid that we have now and solar switching back and forth. Maybe there is something already out there. Can you inform me?
Yes. So we do have something up our sleeve that we can't announce quite yet for a domestic application.
Ooh.
But if you are kind of familiar with the power space, utility space in the States, you'll start to see a shift that's happening in how people are using power and so using energy. And so people, we're seeing more and more applications of solar, so rooftop solar and batteries. And for various reasons, some people it's economic reasons, some people it's reliability and resiliency, and so for some people it's purely an environmental case. But when you want to be able to use that backup power system more intelligently and more flexibly than what's permitted today, and is certainly where the market's going, you will need a technology like ours. So there's certainly applications in the US. We just think that the market's a bit premature, but it's certainly going in that direction.
That is really cool. Your business is taking you to a lot of different places. I saw you had a billboard in Times Square with your face on it, and you've been speaking at conferences. What has been the most impactful for you moving with your business?
Oh, wow. Yeah, this is, I had a chance to travel a lot. I had a chance to travel to Singapore for the first time last year to meet with some investors and potential partners. And I think the story of Singapore is just so inspiring, especially because I deal with emerging markets. You see a country that over a relatively short amount of time was able to leapfrog from what some refer to as a developing country or an emerging market into a very forward-thinking, innovative, clean, very exciting country. And I think it's a very lovely and in some ways like romantic story about development, and that development can happen in different ways for different countries. And so I was really excited to be there, really excited to see the culture, the people. It's certainly an extremely diverse country, although quite small. And I think it's a great narrative for Asia, and I'm excited to see similar narratives come from other countries around the world. And of course, I'm biased. I'm excited to see some of that happening on the continent and of Africa, and it certainly already is in some countries.
That's really cool. Now, we all can hear that you definitely have been working hard, but you play hard too. So where has been your favorite place to go for just leisure? I know you and your girls on your trip even popped up on the Shade Room. It was super cute.
Yes. So it's good to have some good girlfriends who understand your life because you don't get to socialize that much when you're, at least in my situation. And so about once a quarter or a couple times a year, I like to get together with some of my girlfriends and take a trip. And we love to go anywhere where there's good music, good food. So we've been all over the Caribbean, gone to South Africa. So really excited about where my next adventure will be. Yeah, I mean, of course I'm going to love Jamaica. Jamaica's like Nigeria's Caribbean cousin. So it was a blast being there.
That's funny. Now, completely random question. If there's one life-altering thing you could do right now, what would it be? It can be as simple as you want or a complicated dream that you've had.
The true answer is to be able to eat as much as you want and not gain a pound. That would be great. But actually, no, let me give a more serious answer. I would actually want teleporting or making super fast global travel possible. There's a lot of places that I often need to be, that people need to be. And, you know, you also want to spend time with family and friends. And I just spend so much time on planes and in airports instead. So if there was a way for me to be able to get to Lagos in, you know, 20 minutes from San Francisco, that would be really awesome.
I think about teleportation daily. Every time I'm running for a train or just wishing I was at the next block and already inside the building, I'm like, oh, I wish I could teleport there.
Yes.
So I feel you.
I hope it's coming soon. I don't know what, like, you know, Elon Musk and all these guys are up to, but hopefully somebody's working on it. And if not, then I've just pitched a really great idea for some potential entrepreneur that's listening.
Oh, yeah.
And can help start working on that.
I heard that Elon is trying to do a high-speed rail in Chicago to go from straight from downtown to O'Hare Airport, which is our international airport out here. That would be nice. But I think that will definitely require a lot of construction and it will put a halt to the city. So I'm not looking forward to that.
Yep.
I am interrupting our awesome conversation for a very quick announcement. Did you know that you can get 20% off in the Sisters in STEM store? Wait, hold up. There's a Sisters in STEM store? Yes, there is. You should visit it. Go use the code STEMPOWER20 in the Sisters in STEM store at sistersinstem.org/shop and use the code STEMPOWER20 for 20% off your order at checkout. Enjoy! Now back to the show.
I'm going to get back to more of our empowerment piece because we, of course, are featuring STEM-powered women to give empowerment to everyone else. So what contribution do you want to make in life to empower women and girls in STEM?
So there's this thing in the startup world called pattern matching. And basically, it's where investors like to invest in entrepreneurs or startups that look similar to something that they've invested in or supported before. And so for me, I really want to basically increase representation in the startup ecosystem, particularly in deep tech, hardware tech, so that there are more data points and, of course, more representation here. And, you know, I grew up with a mom who was in tech. And as I got older, I started realizing subconsciously what that meant for me and how that made me feel about what I could do. And then that made me think about women and girls who might not have had that exposure or that representation. And so I'm not sure I'm going to be like this rock star superhero, but if I can add to the numbers and increase representation and change what the ecosystem looks like, I think that would be a good thing and make me feel fulfilled.
I feel you on that one. Do you have any advice for the STEM-powered women studying in school and in the workforce still trying to find their way?
Yes. Oh, gosh. Where to begin? The first thing I would say is one of the game changers for me was I had an advocate or mentor. Advocate or mentor, it could be the same. But I had to find one who would champion my case. You know, whenever you're applying to grad school and you need this really powerful letter of recommendation or, you know, you need help, you need favors, you need connections, you need support, just, you know, whether it's, you know, words of encouragement, having a champion really matters. And I think so often we want to find a champion that looks like us. And I think if you can find one, that's great. But sometimes they're allies that don't look like us. Alongside women of color has also been white men who've gone above and beyond to support me. And so look for a champion, look for a mentor, and don't feel that just because you can't find someone that looks like you, that they're not there. It might be a little tough to find them and a little bit demoralizing in certain situations, but it's really important. And we need allies. We need people to back our case, and they can come in all colors and genders.
That is very true. We definitely need people in our corner. And that is why I'm trying to build a community with Sisters in STEM, because we all need someone to lean on. And even if our community does look like each other, we know we can still expand outward and find others elsewhere.
Exactly. So we leverage each other. That does not mean don't go look for your sisters, because we need to support each other. Mm-hmm. But if there's not this critical mass at your campus, if you're 1 in 100 or, you know, 1 in 1,000, like, don't feel that that's a reason to give up, or that you didn't have support. You can still find support, and just be willing and open to look for it in all kinds of people.
Thank you so, so much.
Thank you. This is great. I'm really excited about what you're doing with this platform. And I know that, like, the informal Sisters in STEM at U of I was so helpful to me. And to see you actually take it to a formal organization and platform, I'm sure is going to only positively affect so many more people.
Thank you. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying, working every day to do it. I appreciate you so much. It was great having you on here.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into another episode of the STEM-Powered Women Podcast. I hope you learned something from our discussion that you'll be able to share with others. Visit sistersinstem.org for podcast episodes, stories and advice from your sisters, and much more. Make sure you follow us at The Sisters in STEM on all social media. You can also find me on Instagram at Brittany A. Joy. Whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your shows, please subscribe so you'll know exactly when a new episode drops. And while you're at it, go ahead and give us 5 stars and leave an awesome review to show your sister some love. Remember, sis, you are an empowered woman, a STEM-powered woman. You've got this. I'll see you on the next one. Bye.